ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC Cricket Podcast time with your boys, Corbin Middlemass and not Ed Cowan, but back by popular demand, Trent Copeland joins me live from Perth Stadium. The completion of the first day, the opening day of the Ashes series, one of the most anticipated in recent memory. And holy smokes, Copes, didn't it deliver?
Oh my goodness. Yes, I'm a downgrade from Ed Cowan, but there is so much to talk about. Oh my God. I mean, I'm 39 years of age and I feel like I'm 85 with the anticipation, the storylines, who's going to open. Then all the stuff that happened today, you know what I'm most pleased about? With all of that hype, what we're looking forward to today, both teams landed a punch.
Yeah.
And we go into day two, almost square, England largely in front, but both teams landed a punch. And in particular, the guys that we really needed to stand up in Mitchell Starc in the absence of Pat Cummins, Josh Hazlewood, and a few others, they stood up. And that's career best from Mitchell Starc. You saw it in his face in the celebrations. Oh, Ashes cricket, man, it's so good.
It was awesome, wasn't it? And half an hour before the start of play, it felt like there was already a record crowd in the house. There would have been 35,000 plus. We'd never had more than 32,000 for a single day at Perth Stadium. And the Barmy Army singing along with God Save the King. And I mentioned this as part of Grandstand at Stumps last night. If I was a British cricket fan and I'd travelled all the way out here to watch my team play, the highs and lows of supporting England in a single day, you would have left here thinking, I'm so glad I came. To think you're all out for 172, but at lunch it was looking, you know, positive enough, 4 for 100, and you thought you were in the game, all out 172. The halfway point of the day when the Perth sun's starting to set in, you're thinking, why did I do this? What, the same thing's happening again. And then by the end of the day, when you're fully charged and you've had a full day at the cricket, all of a sudden your side's on top and you're thinking, this is why I decided to make the long trip and sit on the plane for 17 hours and be here for this.
Yeah, exactly right. And this is the new age test cricket, right? There was two innings in one day and some. And I think that, you know, both teams will walk into the sheds and largely feel like, oh man, there was times where you're standing out in the middle of Perth Stadium and thinking, we're cooked here. And then an hour later, you're back in the contest. So, yeah, look, Ben Stokes was outstanding this afternoon. I thought Ollie Pope looked as organised as I've seen him in some time and really vindicated the selection of him batting at number three. But to me, the standout for England was Harry Brook. What he does, what he takes on head-on against an opposition bowling attack. The early phase after lunch was just nuts. You know, that six he hit, backing away over cover off Scott Boland. And that's another undertone of this series. No Cummins, no Hazlewood. Mm. Well, we've got Scott Boland. We're good. Well, England have played offensive there, and Scott Boland had at some stage 10 overs none for 62, and we had to go to the debutant in Brendan Doggett to rein it in.
Is that a theme for the rest of the series?
Most definitely. And yeah, well played, England. Yeah, that in a five-test match series away from home where you haven't won a test in 14 years, basically, you've got to play offensive in different ways. You've got to change the way you go about it. And another way they went about that was Wood and Archer playing the same test for only the second time. I mean, I don't know if you heard any of the stuff that I was doing out in the middle, but before play, when I heard that they were both playing,
yeah,
I was like, I'm an Australian, right? But that is right in my sweet spot. Talking about those two, when have England ever had the 150-plus barrier consistently reached anyway, let alone two of them in the same test? Nuts.
So there's so much to pick apart as part of all of that. It feels like a big tick for England's planning, at least, that they came here, they picked these guys in the lineup and probably overlooked a couple of your old school trundlers in county cricket, for example, to be able to prioritise the guys that bowl with speed. And Ed Cowan often refers to them as the nasty fasties.
And I actually said that in the middle of this morning in my morning piece. And I thought to myself, geez, Ed will take that. It's like Ted Ball that's gone off in warm-ups around the world.
Amazing. But that was a big tick, clearly, in the way that they went about having those guys, even if the batting perhaps needs a little bit of work in the way that it finished and losing their last five wickets in the space of 18 balls. But I'm sure if you're Brendan McCullum and the England coaching staff, you'd be thinking, yep, well, we got that right, and this is what the plan's been about.
Yeah, no Bashir was kind of the talking point. Would we get the five quicks, and how is Ben Stokes going to fit into that? And also, how would you utilise Wood and Archer. And in that first group of, say, 20 overs, I thought they managed them really well. Three overs from Archer up top. Wood followed on from the same end. Atkinson and Cass are still fast. Like, they're 142 to 145 at times. They were both pretty good. Atkinson maybe not at his best today, but what we've seen is that they don't need every one of them to be at their best. They can go full-on, impact-heavy, and largely the Australian group, bar Steve Smith, who copped a few bruises and got hit on the back elbow a couple of times, no one looks in amazing form, which is a concern at this point in a series.
There's a lot to get to on the Australian batting front. I might just start with the Usman Khawaja scenario. So it was a mystery when it was happening. It felt like all of a sudden people cottoned on. They thought, gee, he's missing a lot of time. That he was, even before lunch, that there were periods of, felt like 20, 25 minutes where he wasn't on the ground and Bo Webster was standing in the court. And then sure enough, as Australia quickly wrapped up the innings, and as I said, all in the space of 18 balls, they lost their last five wickets. And you could see pictures on the television coverage, which of course you were working on Seven, that Steve Smith was looking over towards the dugout and almost signalling, hey, we need to get Uzi back out here if he's going to open the batting. And the report from Cricket Australia at the time was, look, he's been off for some stretching and for a toilet break. And so at that stage, we're thinking, well, has he got gastro? Sort of speculating as to what on earth's happening. Why was he absent? And then as the day went on, more and more information came to pass. And he obviously ended up going out there and batting at four. He played a pull shot early in his innings that it was back spasms. And that was the reason why he wasn't out there. And I don't like to speculate too much or sort of tip into conspiracy theories or whatever it turns out to be. But I can only think if it was back spasms, it had to be on the minor end. And Tom Moody said in our post-play coverage that, yeah, if you have a back spasm, generally it requires a fair bit of physio, it takes a couple of days to get over, and you wouldn't be able to play, say, necessarily some of the shots that he was able to play out there. And I wonder how much of it was the back spasm, and this is a serious concern for him, and how much of it is simply Australia mismanaged the clock and they were caught out, and in a little bit of an embarrassing moment, this is their best explanation as to what and why and how it happened.
Yeah, and I mean, the two different announcements in the scheme of an hour in the context of today was just weird. You know, when you're sitting in our position and we get these media releases come through, or, you know, I was looking on the Cricket Australia app just at what was going on, and in the live coverage that was being rolled out, that terminology of toilet breaks and stretching was just weird to see, you know. So, look, I don't know what has happened, but I agree with you. The first thing I actually thought about, and this is, again, I watch way too much cricket, and the first thing I thought about in this moment was when Faf declared in Adelaide in the day-night test, and it was Uzi who had to open the batting to replace David Warner, who had been off the field. And that was Faf in the moment. He's like, Davey's missed the clock here, and I'm going to declare. Yep. So, yeah, that was the first thing I thought about, and the irony of Usman being the one in that moment that opened the batting.
What do you think of the fact that Weatherall then took the first ball? So he was the traditional opener. Marnie was at the non-striker's end. Labuschagne, by the way, is repairing his career at test level, and he's obviously in form scoring runs for Queensland. But it's a two-ball sample size, so I don't want to read too much into it. But all of a sudden, Weatherall gets one flash outside his off-sock, a stump, and thinks, gee, I'm alive. Here I am, I'm playing test cricket. And that came through pretty quick. And then the very next ball, it's like sort of ponting against Callis at the back end of his career, where he's sort of face down on the pitch, and that was it. That's his first test innings out LBW, and really blown away by Jofra Archer in the space of two balls.
Yeah, and I don't think he would have done a lot of prep on Jofra bringing the ball back down the line. If I'm being honest, when I saw that happen, I was like, "Hey, well bowled, that's a beauty." Yeah, and you can't blame Weathers for getting out to that ball. It was a nice ball, but also we were delving into the data on how often does he actually bowl an outswinger? Like, literally, in the last 4 years, how many times has he done it? And it was very, very few. So I think all the game planning, all the talk about how to play Jofra would have been, have plans for the armpit and the ugly stuff up out of the wicket. And then largely when the ball's off stump and outside, that you've got a good game plan on when to play with conviction and when to leave. Not, man, he's bringing the second ball down the line and hit me on the pad. So, look, well bowled to Jofra Archer, and I think you've got to tip your cap to him. I thought he was as good as Mitchell Starc today, and that's saying something.
Ben Stokes. There's just cricketers out there that make things happen, and it feels like that's Ben Stokes again. And we saw it in the warm-up game where he was almost a bit embarrassed that he had the six-wicket haul with a few of these half-trackers. And part of his five for today had a couple of those again. Travis Head pulled one away and was caught at mid-on. But after the quicks did the work up front to really rattle Australia's top order, Stokes went to work again. And what a warrior and a dependable cricketer. And a leader. I couldn't help but feel like this is the Ben Stokes we've come to know, that a guy that just makes things happen for his team.
Yeah, you think about England's prospects of winning an Ashes series away from home, and you think about Joe Root, and he's dismissed for a duck today. And that early punch is laid by Australia. In Joe Root's next 10 innings of magnitude in an Ashes summer, the first one is Australia's. Ben Stokes didn't lay a punch with the bat, but... Yeah. This is the beauty of this guy. Not only his leadership, his mantra, the way he carries himself, but when he gets an opening, he just doesn't let up. And he's got the ability to swing it both ways. And when just watching him walk back to his mark and literally having a joke and a laugh around with mid-off and mid-on in the middle of an Ashes series when they'd just been bowled out for 170.
Yeah.
He was nothing but laughter, nothing but enjoyment. And when he got each of those wickets, he celebrated like it was his first, which I absolutely love from the skipper.
Knee-jerk reactions. So day one of a series, we see what we saw here today. Does it change any of your thoughts on a broad overview perspective, the first of a possible 25 days? Although I think it's fair to say we're not going to get 25 days of cricket. We might not get three full days of cricket here in Perth, the way that that's tracking. But does anything you saw today change how you thought that the whole series would go?
I'll start with Australia, and I'll say I think Brendan Doggett has shown that he's up to it. So that is one tick in the column for Australia that in most conditions around the country, I think he's good to go. So if there is an extended absence of Hazelwood and Cummins doesn't get up for test number two, I think we've got a guy there that is ready-made for test cricket. His first ball today was one of the best balls of the day. I don't know how it misses stumps.
Absolute seed. As a guy too, and I heard you talk about it a few weeks ago, the scout on him is, he bowls these beautiful outswingers to the right-hander. All of a sudden he comes in, gets on to seam back in, and almost cut Ollie Pope in half.
I know, yeah. A really good bowler. And I thought he was one of those guys in the middle phase of the game, and there was a bit of a partnership. Steve went to bowl the bumpers with three blokes out on the hook, and that's where he got his breakthrough. And I think he's up to it, which is a really good thing for Australia. The other way I'll go about it is, if I'm England, geez, I'm pumped about our prospects, because not only did you have no Hazelwood Cummins, but you also had a few opportunities to come in with well-oiled machine plans, and they delivered today on a few of those. So I think they need to aim up and be better against Mitchell Starc, if they can negate him and expose some of the others. But the other two main ones, their plan to Scott Boland.
Yep.
And the way they were going to go about that, I thought Ben Duckett, Ollie Pope and Harry Brook in particular were excellent in that regard.
So just a little side straight here before I get back to England overall, because keep in mind too that there was a point at the halfway stage of the day where you'd be thinking, same old England. How many times have we seen them come out here with all this optimism and all of a sudden it disappears, all out 170, and Australia could have been in front and a few down at the end of the day, and all of a sudden would be saying, oh, this is going to be another lopsided series, good luck to England, and they turned it all around. If you're Boland, what does he do? I mean, this is a guy that's been a crafty cricketer, and as much as it is England's plan to go after him, what's the comeback? Is there something Scott can do to try and fire back and lay a counterpunch?
Well, I think he's going to have to go to his short ball a bit more than he would normally do, and certainly in state cricket he doesn't need to, but he's the kind of guy in flat wicket conditions at the MCG over many years with an old ball, he's got skills. He's got so many options. I think he's just going to have to think about that with a new ball as opposed to just honing in on the top of off. And the beauty of someone like Harry Brook is that it's not just, oh, I've got to worry about him coming down at me and hitting me over cover for six. It's the same ball at the top of off might the next ball be ramped over the keeper, or he might go outside off stump and hit it leg side. So I think there's just got to be options, and Andrew McDonald and the bowling group, Pat Cummins off the field, I think will play a significant role as well.
Before we get out of here, Copes, I need to bring this up, because if this test match today was played in India, we'd be sitting here and saying, 19 wickets on the first day of the series, what a disgrace, the pitches that they prepare in this part of the world, or whatever it turns out to be. And yet we've just sat here and had this great chat about the day and all the that the sort of peaks and valleys that we've witnessed and some fantastic performances. And, you know, I don't leave here today thinking, oh, that the pitch was a disgrace, for example. It ruined that the day moved along very fast.
Yeah.
But I didn't necessarily think that the pitch was to blame.
No.
Am I wrong in thinking that? What do you make of what we saw today with 19 wickets on a single day? And is that a little hypocritical by us as Aussie cricket fans?
I mean, maybe. But 17 wickets here on day one last year. And talking to the groundies before the game today, it was... We proactively did the prep so that this was the same as, you know, in terms of moisture content, hardness, preparation, this was the same as the end of day one for the start of day one today. So they were a day ahead in their prep on where they thought they were at. Now, at the end of the day, we were thinking the same thing and going looking into the data around consistency metrics and things like that. And certainly the stuff that we look at, it showed it was as consistent a pitch as being in Perth for any of the test matches here. So I don't think that can be to blame, but whether the game planning and whether the execution of the bowlers was just too good today, that's probably the question. I don't think anyone's walking off the pitch today and thinking it was unsafe or that was ridiculous. So I reckon you're safe.
Yeah.
You're safe.
So more bad pitch, bad batting, or elite bowling, if you had to tip into one of those three categories?
I would say, yeah, all about the elite bowling groups.
Yep.
And, you know, as much as Brendan Doggett bowled okay, it was really just Mitchell Stark for Australia. I think he was unbelievable. So was Jofra Archer. Mark Wood was really good. He got no wickets, but I still thought he was exceptional.
Yeah.
And that whole bowling group, the way they function today, I think Australia need to go away, do some proactive work on how they're going to, particularly when they went short, there were some really... Yeah, you know, when you're watching on and seeing the dismissals, it's not about these blokes not being able to play, but it looked like they were in a bit of the frantic headspace.
Yeah.
And Alex Carey getting caught at third man. He's one of the smartest cricketers that I've ever come across in my life.
Mm.
Level-headed guy. I doubt he was flustered. But in the moment, he knew the third man was there.
Yeah.
And you saw him. As soon as he'd hit the ball, he turned around and smacked his bat. Those moments being caught after the fact is not what Australia brings to the table at their best.
Is there a way back in this test for the Aussies?
Definitely. Yeah, there is a long way to go in this test. And the stats say that day two is the best time to bat here in Perth across the history of matches at Optus Stadium. So I'm pretty optimistic we might see a pretty full day of batting tomorrow, and that may well advantage England. But the opportunity is definitely there to still win the test. 50 as a deficit, and it might get closer to 40 or 30. All going well. Nathan Lyon looked one of the better batters this afternoon. But Australia will go into the sheds, go into their hotel room tonight, planning no doubt that they're still in the contest.
Australia behind in the test. So 9 for 123, 49 behind as we start the second day. Of course, all the coverage available through the ABC Listen app. Just look out for that green button, the green ABC Sport button. Click on that and you can follow along. Our coverage begins really from 12 noon when Summer Grandstand comes on air, Australian Eastern Daylight Time. Copes, love your insights as always. You're welcome anytime. Thanks heaps for dropping by again in one of our absence here on the ABC Cricket Podcast. But we'll hear from you soon and appreciate your insights as always.
On you, Corb. Thanks, mate. Pleasure.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.